Traditions are important, right? Many holiday traditions are about special foods that are only prepared once a year, and then gathering family and friends to eat. When family members gather, the question often asked is, what do you want to eat? And that's the rub. We're getting some well-timed meal prep coaching so we can be prepared for that question. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It could be a certain aroma. It could be memories of a recipe. Some family holiday recipes are passed down through many generations and prepared for years without being written down. So let's go to the pro. Brad Kahn is here. He's dining room manager of Madison College Food Services, and he oversees the front of the house for food venues. He's also a graduate of the college's culinary program. Brad, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here again.
Well, happy eating this time of year.
Absolutely.
It's always a good time to sit down to a big meal, but then that's where the tension is. Someone has been in the kitchen making that meal. So can you give us some basics here as we go about preparing this full course meal? How do we get our arms around this?
I know it can be very, very daunting, and it's also, you know, stress inducing. I get it. I think what I like to try to tell everybody is that if you take a little time, I feel like we have time for the things we want to have time for. So I feel like a couple of days beforehand, if you start saying, so here's what I would do. Here's what I do. Let's just say Christmas is Tuesday. All right. So say tomorrow morning, you sit down at your table with a cup of coffee and a pad of paper and a pen, or you go to your favorite coffee shop and you get a cup, right? And you just go somewhere, you clear the decks and you get ready to go, and you write down what you're going to serve and when you're going to serve it, and you start there. I mean, you just start by writing out your menu, writing out who's coming, writing out all the different things you're going to need to, like, deal with. And then once you have that menu down, you can break each thing that you do up into a series of, you know, steps that you can, some do 3 days beforehand, some things you can do the day before, some days you have to wait till the day of. But if you start breaking it down into those kind of things and you get everything ready, then you can probably put it into manageable chunks.
Well, I like how you break it up and make a big thing seem more manageable by really segmenting what you have to do right now and what you do tomorrow. But a lot of this is time management, right? And knowing how long things will be cooking and what needs to go into the oven when, so that your timing is impeccable and everything's hot when you get to the table.
Yes, and that is difficult too, but if you can get it down on a piece of paper so that maybe you don't have to think about it so much day of, you're not going, oh, wait a minute, what are they going to... So, I mean, right now in front of me, I have, like, I have a file. Thankfully, my wife is so much more organized than I am, and she keeps... You know, the things that I write down, the prep lists that I write down, she keeps them in a file. I have them with me right here. I'm looking at one right now. This is from, say, Thanksgiving of 2014. And I wrote down on Monday I was going to, you know, go shopping. I was going to make the brine. I was going to, you know, cook off the beans that I was doing and get those ready to go on Tuesday. On Wednesday, I was going to make the... So I have the list. It's braising liquid, make that. So there's, you know, all these things. Sweet potatoes is going to get those ready to go, right? The sweet potatoes aren't going to cook, but I can certainly peel them and chunk them up and put them in a, you know, container and put them in the fridge. So now the day of, all I have to do is dump them in a pan, season them up, put them in the oven. I mean, you know, that it's just it, if you get them half done, and that's something that's done in all restaurants as far as prep is concerned, you get things prepped to a certain point, and then you're ready to go day of. And then day of, I've got, like, you know, this is going to go in at 2 o'clock. This is going to go in at noon. This is going to go in the oven. I know, you know, I'm lucky I have two ovens, but if for people who have one oven, you've got to manage that, because otherwise you're stuck with no oven space and you're thinking, how am I going to get this done? Right.
And then you might have guests who need something to go in the oven.
Exactly. So, you know, and if you're a guest that's going somewhere, you better check and make sure that there's going to be room for you to put something in the oven. Remember, a lot of things can be cooked almost all the way and then, like, held back a little bit and then warmed, you know, and put back in the oven just at the end. I mean, because just getting all those courses, absolutely, don't put too much pressure on you. You know, things can be a little bit not piping hot out of the oven.
And there's also the microwave.
There's also the microwave. You really can. I mean, because people don't have, right, in professional kitchens, you have warming ovens where you get to keep everything and you put it in, oh, you put it in a 200-degree oven, it stays nice and hot for service. But, you know, you can't, you just don't put that pressure on you to make sure that everything is absolutely perfect at the same time, because it's really, really hard to do.
Chef Brad Kahn is with us. He's dining room manager of Madison College Food Services, where he oversees the front of the house for food venues. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Think about your grocery shopping. It's a preliminary thing for holiday cooking. How and where do you shop to make sure you get what you need? Who do you consult for cooking advice? Is it relatives? Is it friends? Cookbooks? Perhaps Google? 800-642-1234. How are you approaching your holiday meal, and what questions do you have as you look at your lists and as you look over your recipes? Brad would love to help you through this. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Brad, I just love how you keep these lists from over the years, because it also shows like a really neat chronicle of how these special meals have played out over the years. And you can, you know, previous years may inform what you do this year, and you might just build on what you're doing. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because at every list, on the back of every list or next to every list, we have sometimes we have like, okay, here's what went right. Here's what didn't go right. Here's what we have too much of. You know, don't make this much, you know, too much mashed potatoes. You know, what are we going to do with all these you know, I mean, there's always things to do, right? People are like, you can't ever have too many mashed potatoes. But I mean, you can't, right? You just don't need to, right? You can simplify. Plus, we have a guest list. We, you know, I look back here and I can see who came, you know, to our house in 2010 or 2008 or something like that. It's nice to see.
And then you might have a note to self as to what they like to eat, yeah, or maybe how much they eat. Because that too, quantity is a big thing as well.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so it's a matter of like looking and knowing how, you know, well, I guess I don't need a 20-pound turkey. I think I'll, you know, go with less or how much, you know, well, but how much leftovers do you want to have? People want like to have a lot of, you know, it's fun to have a lot of leftovers.
Do you think people are over turkeys after Thanksgiving, or do we
It's
do
a possibility. You guys, people call in and tell me, because I don't know. It's a possibility. I mean, I know it's funny because people do it. You can get turkey any time of year. I don't see people roasting turkeys in July. I don't know. You know, they just don't. It's sort of like eating out of context. You know, it's the holidays. We got to eat a turkey. I know. But obviously there's lots of other things to do. You know, Christmas time, our family friends would get together. We would do a big tenderloin roast, beef tenderloin roast, which, you know, how could that be bad? That's a lovely thing. You know, hams obviously are pretty standard, but there's lots of different things you can do. So, I know.
You know, you can spread your wings, and turkeys aren't the only thing, but there are lots of turkeys available. And if you wanted to do a different variation of the turkey you did at Thanksgiving, you perhaps could try it a different way.
Well, I gave you guys a recipe that is this.
We're going to go into the recipe, but we're about to go into the break. So I'm going to pause you there on the recipe.
I was wondering if that was the case. You were looking at the clock. I thought maybe that was the case.
I was looking at the clock. We are talking about holiday cooking, having a blast here with Brad Kahn. He is a chef. He wants your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you wish someone had told you about hosting and cooking holiday meals? Have there been lessons you've learned the hard way when something doesn't go the way you planned? How do you keep your cool in the kitchen? And do you have vegetarians or vegans or some other guests coming with dietary restrictions? Let's talk it through. 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in a moment here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Natural Resources Defense Council has this really handy guesstimator to calculate how much food to make. It's slick how it allows you to choose the number of guests and consider how much they'll eat, small, average, or big eater, and then you plug in how many leftover meals you'd like. You can find that calculator at savethefood.com. We're in the kitchen this hour with Chef Brad Kahn as we work our way through holiday meal planning and food prep. He's dining room manager of Madison College Food Services. You can join in 800-642-1234. How and where do you shop to make sure you get the ingredients you need? And who do you turn to for cooking advice? What is your cooking style? Are you open to new recipes or do you stick with tried and true family heirloom recipes? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Jim now, joining us from Oconomowoc. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have two things to say. First, my fallback for reference is the Joy of Cooking cookbook.
And then that's a classic.
But I cook by taste and my taste and what my family prefers. So, you know, it works. But I do have a question.
Sure.
Okay. It's been lately, the last, what, dozen or so years, it's been said to quit using the stuffing in a turkey. End up not getting to temperature and therefore making me sick.
Right.
I do like, though, to take a lemon and peel it and then shred it up and then put the juice and the lemon and some pepper into the core. Do you find this as a potential for cross-contamination or just the salmonella maybe contamination? Or do you think that it would probably not have any, you know, ill effects and get up to temperature?
No ill effects at all. That's exactly what you want to put. You want to get aromatics into the center of your bird, give it some flavor that way, and lemon is perfect. I always say that lemon juice can fix about, like, you know, 60% of your problems in the kitchen. Really, any salads and anything, lemon is perfect. Lemon, fresh herbs, right in the center of the turkey. You're not going to eat that. And it's going to be, there's enough space in there. And really, the ultimate problem with the stuffing in the turkey is that, right, you can't get the center of the stuffing to be, or it'll be cool, or the danger zone of temperature, which is 120 degrees or less, between 70 and 120, you for too long a time, and you don't want that. And then, of course, by the time you get the center of the stuffing hot enough, your bird is going to be overcooked. So that's why we don't do that. But yes, that's exactly what you want to do. You want to get some aromatics in the center of your bird, and that will help a lot and certainly make the house smell great.
Jim, does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. And I have one more question, if possible.
Yeah, go ahead.
Does the lemon, does the acid in the lemon help break down the meat and make it a little more tender?
I don't know, because it's inside the cavity of the bird, so it's not really contacting much in the way of the meat. But that's the other reason why it wouldn't be a contamination problem, because it's so acidic that the bad bugs don't like the acidity, so you're good in that way. But you'll get a bit of an aroma. I mean, you know, if you wanted more flavor from that, you'd probably want to, you know, brine the bird or you know, get it in a marinade for a good length of time. But it'll give you something.
Jim, just out of curiosity, what else is on your table besides your bird?
Oh, usually green bean casserole. I will make a stuffing on the side, you know.
All right, the usual suspects. Sounds good. Well, have a great holiday. Thanks so much for calling in. Brad, you were alluding to this earlier. How do you go about your turkey?
Well, this is a turkey that I have tried, you know, obviously roasting. And the problems that you have when roasting a whole bird, you know, it's covered, lots of cookbooks, lots of things on the internet. By the time you get, you know, first of all, you want two different temperatures for the dark meat and the white meat. You want the breast to be 160 to 165. You want the dark meat to be about 10 or 15 degrees more than that. Trying to get them all done at the same time, I think we've all seen, you know, you flip the bird. Oh, you take a piece of foil and you cover the breast. It's a lot of messing around just to get it all right. And a number of years ago, I stumbled upon a recipe on the internet. Mark Bittman is a gentleman who was a columnist for the New York Times and has written cookbooks and had a column for many years in the food section of the New York Times. And it was a 5-minute video on the internet, which you can still find. And if you look it up, It was a braised turkey, which is to say that it's a turkey that's been taken apart into its pieces and then browned on the skin side, and then braising. For those of us who might not know what braising is, it's basically roasting in an amount of liquid that's not like covering the meat. It's about halfway up. So what you end up with is, if you don't cover it and you leave it so that it's above the liquid, you get a really flavorful liquid. You get meat that's like perfectly done, because what ends up happening is you put the thighs in for the first 45 minutes, and then you leave those in while you put the breasts in for the last 45 minutes to an hour, and then everything comes out at exactly the right temperature. It doesn't look perfect. It's not a Norman Rockwell turkey, but it is absolutely...
What do you do with that? What do you do with the brine, the liquid?
The liquid that you're in it? Uh-huh. Well, the liquid can be, you can do things, two things. You can either just scoop it out, because, of course, the liquid, not only, if you look at the recipe that we posted, it's got, you know, aromatic vegetables in it. It's got some bacon in it, which, you know, also aromatic and nice. Mm-hmm. And so you can take that and you can just kind of lay that over the turkey. It's as a natural kind of a jus to go on. Or you could cook that down. While you took the meat out, you could cook that down into more of a
gravy.
You know, more of a gravy.
Yeah.
You could certainly thicken it with anything that you would normally thicken a gravy with, cornstarch or, you know, flour and milk and that kind of stuff. You could do that too.
Yeah,
just make sure it's not too salty.
That brine is really salty, juicy.
It can be right, exactly.
Potent.
Especially if you've brined the turkey. The recipe doesn't call for you to brine the turkey. I sometimes do. I usually do, actually. And so sometimes that liquid that you're cooking in can be, which is mostly just stock, but if it gets a little too salty, then it could get a little too salty. So you want to look out for that if you're cooking it down. But it's easy, you know, it comes out of the oven, it's easy to cut up into, you know, into a big platter, a nice looking platter, and really that's, you know, it smells great, and it's just the best way to do.
And we have that recipe at WPR.org. You can click on over to the morning show page to find it. Well, Brad, not everyone is a meat eater and not everyone can tolerate gluten. How should hosts alter the meal plan to accommodate dietary restrictions?
Boy, that's always a hard one. But there is just so many resources available to you now to, you know, change things up if you want to. You know, I have a nephew who knows nuts. And so, you know, when they come for the holidays, we clear the house. We just clear the house. And there are plenty of, I know that, you know, years ago, you know, and I love pecan pie. And my wife turned to me and said, what should we do as a substitute? And I said, well, how about a coconut cream pie? She does all the baking. I cook and she bakes. It works out really
nice.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and so she said, how about, you know, coconut cream pie? And I said, that would be great. And the pecan pie has never come back, because because we love it. And because there's always some, you know, you can always change things up a little bit, you know. But it can be tricky. I mean, you know, especially around this time of year when there's so much that's, you know, baked goods and holiday cookies and so much. I know, you keep track of what's what. You try not to put them together. I think people are getting really used to doing that. They really are getting used to, like, just put, here's a plate of things that are not, you know, whatever. And there's some really nice baking mixes that are gluten-free, you know. And
you do fabulous things with veggies. Your veggies are killer.
Yeah. Thank you. I hope so. You know, vegetable-wise, you know, especially, right. I mean, a lot of people, they don't want to mess around with vegetables, right? It's like, why is that salad on my plate with all this other stuff? But, I mean... You know, just from in terms of, like, you know, salad and having something, what you really want to think about is, you want to think about it to a certain extent. You want to think about contrasting, you know, so much rich food around the holidays that you sort of want to find something that's going to be, you know, a little light and refreshing, and something that's acidic and going to kind of clear the decks for all that heavy food that we're talking about. So, you know, salads that are sort of, you know, slawish, like crispy, mm-hmm. and fresh and lemony and herby, those kind of things are, you know. And then as far as just making vegetables, yeah, I mean, you've got the oven on, so you end up I do a lot of roasting of vegetables, which is, you know, the way I prefer any, you know, especially this time of year when what you have is a lot of root vegetables around. And if you just do a bunch of root vegetables, then you very simple root vegetable, you know, salt and pepper, olive oil, and on a sheet pan and in the oven. And,
boom.
You know, boom. And then it goes in, and you look at it after about 15 minutes, and it's getting a little crispy around the edges. And remember, so much of what you're doing about cooking is driving away water. So this, what you're doing is you're concentrating flavors, you're roasting, so you're driving away water, and you end up with a really nice. And if you do them all separately, then, you know what, I know, that's just a lot of rigmarole rather than just mixing them all together. But they do cook at different different times. So some things take 10 minutes, some things take, you know, 30. So that's what we do.
Chef Brad Kahn stays with us to walk through holiday meals. Your questions, your insights on holiday cooking are welcome. They're front and center at 800-642-1234. What was your first time hosting a holiday meal like? What did you wish someone had told you about hosting and cooking holiday meals? Have there been lessons you've learned the hard way? Call in. There's a line for you, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update on the Ideas Network. We often feel obligated to eat festive foods at holiday parties, but you might not enjoy mince pies, brandy butter, mulled wine, eggnog, Christmas cake, or you may indulge in these things once a year. We're exploring the one-off holiday meals and the kitchen prep tips that can extend throughout the year here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chef Brad Kahn is our guide in the kitchen. He heads up dining services at Madison College, and he's answering your questions at 800-642-1234. So what's been your biggest aha moment about cooking for a big group at the holidays? Do you throw a party and you're wondering how you can partake in it without sweating the details as the host? Do you have advice on what makes a great host food gift? Call in at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Eve now in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Eve.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay, this year for Christmas, because we always have ham or turkey, we're not doing that. We're doing ribs. We're doing twice baked potatoes. My sister-in-law's going to make those. And my daughter's making green bean casserole and some kind of dessert, which will be a surprise.
See, if you trust the people you're bringing to the holidays, then you can say, yes, you make that, and you make that, and you make that, and then that makes everything a lot more manageable. It's perfect, especially if you know they know how to make. In fact, that's what a lot of people say, what should I bring? And a lot of times what I will tell them is make what you like making, make what you like eating, and make what something that you're really good at that you don't have to stress too much about. And 9 times out of 10, it turns out perfectly. They come with exactly what we want, and it's lovely.
Any tips for Eve on those ribs?
On the ribs? You know, the ribs, are we talking about like just like some pork ribs?
I don't
ribs?
Know.
What
Eve,
kind of ribs?
Eve,
I mean, this is all kinds of ribs.
About?
What are we talking about
here?
Pork ribs.
Yeah.
Spare ribs.
Yeah.
Love whatever.
It. We're not going to fire up the grill this time of year. I mean, we could. Sometimes, but.
we cook them in the crock pot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great. I mean, you know, when it's one of those meat, it's just going to fall off the bone and be perfect and wonderful. There's not a, that's an excellent choice. There's nothing to it. I mean, you know, in they go, but you brown them first, and then you get them in the crock pot, and you let them just go. And
are they barbecue? What kind, how are we saucing them up?
They'll be, what is this stuff called? One's Baby Ray's, and the other one is something Carolina.
Yeah.
Something.
Oh, the Carolina barbecue sauce? Carolina barbecue sauce is going to be like a mustard-based, usually, kind of a thing. Yeah, that'll be delicious. Yeah.
Love it. Eve, thanks so much for calling in, and have a great meal. Let's go to Eric now in Milwaukee. Hi, Eric.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife and I are kind of turkeyed out after Thanksgiving. We usually host for about 20 to 25. So during Christmas over the past few seasons, we have been cooking prime rib. Mm. And 2 years ago, it turned out perfect. Last year, not so much. I'm just looking for a little advice on prepping and thoroughly cooking the prime rib so it's not too chewy and also a kind of way to just put that little pizzazz on it.
Well, the first thing you need for any kind of a roast like that is you need an instant read thermometer so that you know what you're getting in terms of, you know, because I mean, you know, if you do it all the time, you can sort of tell by look or feel or whatever. But with a big roast like that, you almost always have to have, you know, an instant read. So I have an instant read thermometer. I also have a thermometer that's one of those that you that like plugs into a unit outside the oven, and then the wire goes into the oven, and then the probe sits inside the roast at all times. One of the things you want to do is if you want something that's, you know, medium or medium rare, you find the right temperature, you take it out of the oven 10 degrees before it gets to that temperature, because carryover cooking, when it sits and rests, it will rise another 10 degrees or so. And, you know, that's the kind of thing, especially with a prime rib, you want to leave that, you know, nice and rare. I don't want to get into temperatures because, you know, the health department might have a problem with me. But there are, you know, and that you can certainly look it up. And, you know, so if you want a nice medium rare, you know, prime rib, you know, which is, I guess, frowned upon in some circles, but not in others. Mm-hmm. You look that up, and then you know exactly when that roast is coming out.
Eric, how does that sound?
That sounds good. Is it worth putting on the grill after we just bake it to give it that charred taste, or does that really take a lot of flavor out of it?
You want to fire up the grill at this time of year, you go ahead, as I do too, because I'm with you. I'm totally with you. If I can shovel off my back patio, I will do it and get the grill out. It's always really good. You could also start by putting it on the grill. I mean, if it's a nicer time of the day, whatever, find the best time of the day, fire up the grill, give it a little marks on, you know, whatever, get it on a hot fire for a couple of minutes so you can get it back. You can even do that day before, right? Day before, mark it off, you know, put a nice, you know, rub on it, nice dry rub or something. Lots of recipes out there. And then give it a few minutes on either side of the grill, take it off, put it in a pan, put it back in the fridge, and then the next day you can go in the oven with it. Now you'll have that nice grilled flavor, which is a great idea, and it's been nice and browned on the outside, and then you go into the oven and you cook it to the right temperature.
Notice how Brad's ears perk up when Eric says the word grill.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to throw that out there. Mm-hmm. It's all of a sudden like Brad's mm-hmm. like, oh, did someone?
No, it's funny because I always see these things say, well, it's time to break out the grill. I'm like, if it's time to break out the grill, it's always time to break out the grill. The only thing that gets me is that it's dark. It's really hard to, I know there are lights, you can get lights for your head and things like that. I don't have that. But I mean, you know, yeah, if there's not a foot of snow back there, I'm rolling that thing out, and I'm doing it. Yeah.
Yep. Well, Eric, thanks so much for the call. Brad, you know, people get to your house, they're hungry. They want to eat right away. What should we do for apps?
Well, I think you want to probably, I know they're hungry, but you kind of don't want to like make them fill up, or maybe you do. It's the holidays. Why not? Right? There's always, you know, when people come over to our house, there's always lots to eat. We always do, you know, cheese platters. There's so much, you know, it's so interesting to note that, you know, in our lifetimes, we've gone from, you know, grocery stores that had so little in the way of product. I think of the things that I can get at a regular grocery store now that just weren't even, when I was a kid going with my mom, walking around, looking for stuff, it didn't exist, wasn't there. And now you can get so much. So there's always, you know, there's great meats and cheeses, and there's local places in a lot of, I know we're here in Madison, but in a lot of towns around, there are butchers now. That's another nice thing, is you got butchers that can give you tips on a nice, you can get a nice piece, you know, if you're turkeyed out, as everybody's saying, you know, there's lots of nice roasts, lots of nice things. They always have tips. They always have tricks for you to prepare that. So it's always a great way to go do that. But they have nice, you know, charcuterie, beautiful, you know, salamis and nice things like that. And they have cheese. There's so many good cheeses around. So that's always a nice thing to put out. People love that. And then, you know, another thing, you get the crock pot out. You get the Instant Pot. So many people have Instant Pots. You know, you get it out there. You get some meatballs going, or you get a hot crab dip. That's another one that's a big hit at my house. You know, that's the kind of thing that you just sort of, you know, you put together and it sits in the fridge for a couple of days. And then when it's time to bring it over, it gets warmed up in a crock pot. You're not taking up oven space. You know, it gets plugged in. It's sitting there. Easy.
Talk us through that hot crab dip.
The hot crab dip is it's crab. It's, you know, cheese. It's cream. It's you know, it's a cream cheese. It's a cheesy kind of a crab dip, and it gets nice and bubbly on the top, and it's got, you know, a nice chunk of, you know, fresh crab in it that you can get at lots of places these days, and it canned, and it's, you know, it's wonderful, refrigerated and canned. It's lovely. And then I think it's just, you know, some cream cheese and cheddar cheese and a little bit of, you know, maybe sour cream and mayonnaise, and then it just sort of, you know, bubbles away.
Bubbles away.
Bubbles away, yeah. Add some artichokes to it if you want, or that kind of thing. Again, a million variations of it all over. I found that Pinterest is a really good, you know, sometimes maybe you can't, you know, you have to look at the recipe and go, okay, I don't know if that'll work or not. And sometimes it will and sometimes it won't. But, you know, there's a lot of, and the beautiful pictures, and you can go, oh, that worked out. That's a good idea. That's a nice idea. Right. So, I mean, you know, I look at that one too sometimes.
Brad Kahn is with us. He is a chef at Madison College helping us pull together our feast. You can join in. There's a line for you, 800-642-1234. Is there something intimidating on your holiday table this year? Do you want to talk it through or do you want to stump Brad? 800-642-1234. Brad, a lot of people will be guests this holiday. They'll be bringing something. In the area of when a guest says, what should I bring? What is your best recommendation from the host? Because they want to bring some food.
Yeah, they do. And I always, as I said before, I like to tell them to bring what you are comfortable making, what you like making, what you're good at making. But if it's something that's going to get warmed up in the oven when you come there, make sure that they make sure that the host knows that you're expecting to put this thing in the oven for a few minutes. And, you know, there's so much that can be made that's going to, like, cook to a certain degree, and then you can, like, take it out of the oven, let it sit, and then you can bring it later. You know, if as long as you do that and then get it cool in enough time so that it doesn't sit at a bad temperature, and, you know, then you injure all your guests. You don't want to do that. So, you know.
What would be most convenient and helpful for the host to have the guest bring?
Oh, boy. It's difficult because there are some, I know there are lots of people out there like, I don't want anybody in the kitchen.
Right.
But, you know, that's the joy of it. Everybody, you know, people in my house, I mean, and I don't have a big kitchen, and everybody's in the kitchen, you know, and I love having everybody in the kitchen because to me, you know, cooking is a social thing. And I wish I had room for everybody to, you know, be chopping and mixing and whatever. And people will help. You know what's helpful? Doing some dishes. That's always a helpful thing.
I love it. I love it. If you're hosting Christmas dinner this year, start budgeting for that meal. According to a survey from Go Banking Rates, Americans plan to spend an average of $152 on Christmas dinner. Of course, one of the best ways to save is to ask others to contribute to the feast. We've been talking about that. And we're looking at how to pull together that feast with Madison College's Chef Brad Kahn. You have a line to the chef, 800-642-1234. Do you want to bounce off a menu idea? Chef Brad is a great sounding board for that. Is there something you've always wanted to try for your table, but you feel a bit intimidated? Let's talk it out. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. The phone is 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment on the Ideas Network. We're going through the food basics, pulling together great meals here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Madison College chef Brad Kahn is our guide, and he's here for you with your questions about your holiday table. Soup to nuts, he's your guy at 800-642-1234. Let's start out with Amelia joining us from Appleton. Hi, Amelia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead.
I just wanted to share my favorite appetizer to bring that my cousin introduced me a couple years ago. It is a cranberry orange relish, and you can have it on, like, any kind of cracker. It's, like, one navel orange and one of the small packets or the one-pound bags of fresh cranberries. You just stir it in the blender and add a little bit of sugar. The recipe called for a half a cup of sugar, but that just makes it too sweet for my taste, so I add sort of a few tablespoons, but
that's raw, isn't it? It's not cooked.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Oh, no, I love that. That's great.
Yeah, it's really good on, like, any kind of cracker. And then my family does something for our main course for Christmas dinner that I haven't seen anywhere else. We're a very German family, and so we have sauerbraten for Christmas dinner.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, that's a lot of messing around. I mean, it's not they're terribly difficult, but it involves some marinating and it involves, mm-hmm. you know, right. And some, you know, but then once you get it cooking, it's beautiful.
Tell us what it is.
So, if Amelia wants to tell us what it is, she can do that too. But what it is, it's a marinated, beef. I just know what kind of beef do you use? I mean, usually it's like a round or something like that.
Yeah, that's what we use.
Yeah. Yeah,
you marinate it in beer for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Beer with onions mm-hmm. and brown sugar mm-hmm. and cloves, and it's just delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
So that's a marinade, sort of a brine too. So now you're getting you're getting some really
good flavors.
Does it depend
what type of beer that it's?
You know, the more flavorful the beer, the better. Yeah.
Okay.
I guess I'm not sure. I usually use whatever I have, so yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amelia, have you been serving that as a very long tradition in your family?
My immediate family has done that pretty much as long as I can remember. Our extended family does like ham or turkey.
Yeah.
But yeah, as long as I can remember.
Do you guys do like the gravy with the ginger snaps?
I've never done.
No, there's like snaps, that's sort of a traditional thing. It's I don't mean to, you know, get going on something that you do, but I'm just saying, sure. I know that in some circles that's sort of a gravy for the beef, and it also has crumbled ginger snaps in it that kind of thickens it up and it gives it that very, very interesting flavor.
Oh, wow. That might be something to try, Amelia. Thanks so much for the call. So what about mashed potatoes? What can we do with a new twist? Some people are turkeyed out, and that might be the same for mashed potatoes. I mean, I love mashed potatoes.
Yeah,
but
I know.
Can we do something different with them?
You can add other root vegetables to them. I mean, you know, you don't want to add beets because then you end up with like a pile of what looks like bubble gum on your plate. You don't want to do that. But I mean, you know, some of the things that I like, you know, like parsnips. Parsnips are one of my absolute favorite. And if you don't know what they are, they look like carrots, but they're white. And they've got just a wonderful flavor. They're sweet and they're perfect. You peel those and you cook those along with the potatoes, and they'll get nice and soft, right? Another one is celeriac, which is this root. It's a very ugly, knobby, circular kind of a root. And sometimes it's called celery root and sometimes called celeriac. And you peel that, same thing, chunk it up. You cook it in a little bit of milk and just boil it, and it gets soft. And you add that to the mash. You know, you can, or you can just mash those. You can, you know, whatever. And, of course, a lot of people are doing cauliflower these days, you know, which is...
Well, you were just saying cauliflower almost doubling as cabbage you've been doubling as a pasta.
Cabbage, I mean, yeah, and a lot of things. If you're trying to avoid pasta, if you're trying to avoid carbs and things like that, or you have a wheat problem, yeah, I just, you know, use thinly sliced cabbage and saute it with a little onion and garlic, and you've got... You know, you've got a base for almost anything. You can, you know, I mean, you can just put spaghetti sauce on that, and it works. It's great like that. And we do that in a lot of ways. In fact, the last time when we had a bunch of people over at Thanksgiving, we did a big pile of that. And usually the vegetables kind of go awry at our house because everybody wants like all the other stuff. But that got eaten. That got eaten and was really good. And again, a little light and refreshing and not, you know, not too heavy. A counterpoint to a lot of the other things you're making.
Well, you're always keeping them guessing. Mm. Got to keep your guests guessing, right? Well, Chef Brad Kahn, thank you so much for your time. This has been so much fun.
Always, always a pleasure to be here.
Chef Brad Kahn is dining room manager of Madison College Food Services, and he oversees the front of the house for food venues. He's also a graduate of the college's culinary program. We've been talking about holiday food meal prep and how it is all going to play out over the next few days. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about lutefisk.
Lutefisk, cod that's been preserved in lye, is a Scandinavian delicacy. It's a polarizing dish. Some people grow up loving it, while others despise it. But that doesn't stop people from packing into the basement of the Christ Lutheran Church in DeForest every year. For months, volunteers plan the dinner and cook everything from scratch, including 1,900 pounds of lutefisk. I went to see what brings people back year after year.
Fish, please.
Yeah, I'm Dan Paulson with Christ Lutheran Church, and I'm one of the co-chairpersons of the lutefisk dinner. And how long have we been involved? Jan, we have been involved since about, 1975.
I'm Jan Schultz, live in DeForest.
38 years ago. It was the first dinner.
What it is, it's a cod or a whitefish, and then they dehydrate it and preserve that in lye, and then it has to be rehydrated and wash all the lye out.
When they were immigrating, when they came to this country from Norway, they preserved it and they could put it in their suitcases. It was dry, they could bring it here.
At Christmas, my father was 100% Norwegian, my mother 100% German, so I'm just confused. But at Christmas, we had the lutefisk dinner. My father on my left, my uncle on my right. They passed that dish back and forth between the two of them, and I couldn't stand the smell. And finally, when they killed all the taste buds in my mouth, then I started loving it. So it's an acquired taste. But my sons, they love it right off the bat. Here's some more of the cooks. You can see the kettle's of boiling water. So the boiling water drains off. And we drop it into a dish, and that's where we separate the bones from the meat itself.
Yeah, once you get to be a bone picker, you never get rid of this job.
My name is Janice Tipple, and I live in the town of Windsor.
Janice, you said you became a member of Christ Lutheran. For what reason?
Because of the lutefisk dinner.
Really?
I did! Yes! We've been coming to this lutefisk dinner long before we became members. And it was the best lutefisk dinner, and we decided, well, we need to become members of this church.
One way to pick a church.
Today we have a lutefisk and Swedish meatballs with gravy, mashed potatoes, rutabagas, a delicious coleslaw, and lefse, and a melted butter, of course. Plenty of it. Matt Erlinson and Madison.
Wendy Bunster, Antigo, Wisconsin.
This is a generational type of thing. Our grandparents, great-grandparents. We were raised having lutefisk lefse
for Christmas dinner.
The smell one can never forget. It's not good. It has to do with the lye flavor.
Ask him, he travels to
all of them, practically.
They asked me how I found the lutefisk. I said there was a truck went by and we just followed our nose. My name is Dale, and my last name is Erlinson, and I live in Antigo. My nickname is Swede. That might have something to do with the fact that I like lutefisk. Well, mostly because it's a good fish. Because they cooked the lutefisk just perfect.
Our patriarchs here have been eating lutefisk since they could crawl, and it wasn't our favorite as children, but it's really grown on us, and now it's a great tradition.
This story is part of a new project from Wisconsin Life called Food Traditions. It's a multimedia exploration of food, culture, and identity, and can be found at wisconsinlife.org/foodtraditions. And we want to hear about your own food traditions. Share them with us on Instagram. Just search for Wisconsin Life and hashtag FoodTraditionsWI. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Lutefisk and more. It is the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
Now I suppose I'll eat you as I hold my nose. Oh, lutefisk.